Hi, this is Jay Insolaco, and I'm your host of Stability and Recovery. Today, we will have Adam Helbling on the show. Adam was diagnosed with bipolar disorder at age 21. In January 2011, Adam went off his medications for just 5 days. His delusions came back and ultimately resulted in a car accident that left him paralyzed from the chest down. Today, Adam is an author of Well, I Guess I'm Not Jesus, a motivational speaker, and a life coach. On today's show, we will talk to Adam and see how he got stability in his own recovery.
How you doing? This is Jay Insolaco from Stability and Recovery, and today I'd like to welcome Adam Helbling. How you doing, Adam?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm well, man. Thanks. What do you call it, man? I just want to start off by saying thank you for being on the show, and you know, you're truly an inspiration to me. I looked into your story, man, and I'm hoping everybody out there is going to think of you as a big inspiration like I do.
Awesome. Thank you. And thanks for reaching out. It's been cool, you know, developing this friendship. And just crazy. You're in Jersey, right?
Yeah, I'm in New Jersey, yeah. And you're in Ohio.
Yeah, so,
yep.
So it's just crazy. Bipolar, mental health, you know.
Yeah.
Getting it connected, so it's good.
Well, you know what's cool about it, Adam, is that, like, we have a lot of similarities. And I think it's cool to come together and talk about mental health and get people aware that, you know, we are people just like them. And, you know, with our diagnosis is, you know, like we're one out of every five people. So I'm trying to hope to open people's eyes that, you know, people who get a grip of their mental health and their adversities, you know, live normal lives or so-called normal lives. You know what I mean? However you want to take that normal word. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can live a normal life, and that's the thing. There's so much stigma, and people are ashamed of labels, ashamed of, you know, having a mental illness. But, yeah, it's a lot more common than you think, and that's the problem. There needs to be a conversation, and more people need to be talking about it. So it's good that you're talking about it, and I love to talk to you about it. So.
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking, like, stability and recovery – basically will take us from like a background sense to an acceptance and then to a stability. And, you know, I just want to start with a couple background questions just so the people out there who are listening and don't know your story have a little more knowledge of, you know, kind of where you are in your life. So I just want to start off by asking, like, when were you diagnosed with bipolar disorder? Or how old were you?
Yeah, I was actually 21 years old. So... And it was 2008, fall of 2008. That was my, you know, first visit to the psych ward. A lot of stuff leading up to it, you know, all these different signs of a manic phase, you know, just stuff. It wasn't stuff a normal person would do, or even, you know, I'm referring myself in the third person, but like the normal Adam. It's like not something I would normally do. It was just very out of character for me. You know, the drug binge, the spending, you know, buying a Segway, the trip to California, just everything, you know, not going to class for 5 weeks and growing marijuana in my closet, all that. And
yeah,
ended up in the psych ward believing I'm Jesus and thinking cameras are watching every move. And, you know,
that's completely a manic phase, because I know it, because I've been there.
Yeah.
I understand. And that has to do with the mania of the bipolar disorder. You know, and I was thinking too, like, do you think that you were self-medicating before you were diagnosed with marijuana and different drugs because you weren't sure?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it all started with depression, and, you know, that came out, and that's with bipolar. And that's, you know, I finally got a diagnosis and got on the right meds, but, you know, you'll hear that later. I didn't, you know, lead in the right direction or follow through. I still smoked pot, but which can be really dangerous, but I'll touch on that later. But it started in sixth grade, you know, depression and months at a time, and always wrong diagnosed with depression. It happened, you know, in middle school and high school, and then in college, you know, went through a fraternity, went through hazing, all that. And just that led me to self-medicate using, you know, it was marijuana. That was my escape. That's released, you know, all my fears, anxieties, faded away. So that's something I did on a daily basis. And I'm a straight A student through high school and college program and on a full ride scholarship, and, you know, but I was a pothead, but that's how I dealt with depression. But you know you're tired.
I do understand what you're saying, Adam, and I was a big pothead too for like 2 years straight. I was smoking it every day, And what it was doing, in hindsight, looking back at it, that was calming my brain down. You know, it was slowing me down. And that's what I was doing every day. And then once I started getting into the harder drugs, that's when the manic break came and I started thinking the same things that you were thinking as far as, you know, just psychosis and that kind of thing. And, you know, like, were you taking your mental health seriously after your diagnosis? You were saying you continued to smoke pot, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it was serious for a little bit, but, you know, I didn't learn my lesson. I learned my lesson the hard way later, but, you know, it's 2.5 weeks in the psych ward thinking I'm Jesus. You know, I actually enjoyed it. You know, you think you're Jesus, you think you're on a reality TV show. And then, you know, you get on meds, you get that diagnosis, and then I'm taking this partial rehabilitation program with psychologists and group therapy and stuff, and I go through drug rehab, and nobody can really tell me that even though my psychiatrist said marijuana could lead to psychosis, drug rehab, they just tell me that's, you know, it makes you lazy or this and that. So it didn't scare me away from it. So I pay off my debts, you know, I'm $10,000 in debt, get back to school. A month later, I'm back to smoking pot. And,
you know what I wanted to ask you is, how long after your diagnosis did you actually have that, that car accident?
It was a little over 2 years. So, you know, I kept smoking pot and then, you know, building up I was captain of the water ski team in Ohio State and kind of working towards building that up with nothing, with the help of some other people on our team and doing a lot of recruiting. And I was a civil engineering major and, you know, I'm still accomplished and one of the top 24 students at OSU, like get my name on campus and stuff. Even with all this stuff going on, I'm still accomplishing a lot. I can't imagine how much more I wouldn't. But, you know, the car accident, you know, I went national for water skiing, and 3 months later I got off my medications. And it was just, I was scared of the side effects. I thought I would get diabetes. So it just, that's all it took. You know, smoking pot and being off my meds for 5 days, full-blown manic episode. And then thought I was Jesus.
It's funny you say that because there were so many times where I got off my medications because I have a dual diagnosis of bipolar disorder type 1 and addiction to drugs and alcohol. That's like my dual diagnosis.
Yeah.
So going through the recovery part as far as the drug and alcohol use, you know, it got to a point where it was kind of frowned upon to take medications because, you know, I kind of got to a point where, you know, if I'm not taking drugs and I'm to alter my state, like, why do I need to take medication, you know, to fix it? It was like a struggle that I had there. And, you know what I mean? So, like, I would go off my medications because I kind of was testing the waters. And the next thing you know, I'd have a full-blown manic state again. And it wasn't because of the drug use like you had, like, to go back to smoking pot. I just went off my medications. And I went, you know, just like you said, like, after 2 years, you kind of went back into a manic state. You know?
Yeah, and I think that's the medications were what was keeping me stable. I think that was holding me on, and I was like on a very high dose of Seroquel. You get that stuff knocked me out. You know, I'd sleep 14 hours a day, and I'm taking Depakote, and I didn't like taking it, but I still took it. But I was still smoking, and you know, as soon as I go off that stuff, 5 days later, I take off on that joyride and going 120 miles per hour on a flat tire, thinking I'm Jesus, running from the police in Indiana. You know, I'm like three, 4 hours away from Columbus, you know, snow, 5 inches snow on the ground, negative temperatures, and, you know, song comes on, you know, Dynamite by Ted Cruz. I throw my hands up in the air sometimes, open my sunroof, put both hands up, flick off the police, and everything goes black, slip 5 times, end over a quarter mile on a field, and die at the scene, get resuscitated, and, you know, that's it. That's where, you know, quadriplegic, and that's where life really started over, and that's how I learned my lesson. So
I was gonna say, let me ask you, man, like, when you know because I read your book, and you know, I think you're a really good writer too, but when you actually excuse me, threw your hands up in the air, you just don't remember anything else after that then?
No, the last thought going through my mind is I hear that sign, I hear it's like I throw my hands up in the air sometimes. So I hear that. Just happens. That comes on. Open that sunroof. Put both hands up. You know, I'm looking down. I'm going 120. And I think when I flick up those police, like, I just see the road ahead of me. And I think I'm making it to that mansion in California. These cops are going to be following me all the way there. And I'm going to quarter ticket. Yes.
That's in your book. And that's in your book. So if people read your book, they'll understand what you're saying now.
Oh, yeah. That's my last memory. Next memory, I wake up in the ICU with tubes coming out of me everywhere, breathing tube. Can't move, can't feel my legs. So, you know, that's the next thing. That's the next thing I remember. You know, terrifying.
Wow, man. I can't even imagine waking up in the hospital and, you know, not knowing. Because I remember in your book, you had the trach or the breathing tube in, and you looked to your mom and you wrote, you know, on the chalkboard or dry erase board that
piece of paper, notebook,
okay, a notebook, and then you wrote, did you hurt anybody? And then, you know, when you found out that you didn't, you know, you wanted a hug. I mean, I can't even imagine. Like, I really felt it, man, when I read it, you know.
Oh, yeah. And it was crazy. You know, my parents, you know, not knowing if I was going to be dead or alive when they got there, you know, they were with them the day before, and they get that knock on the door from the police. You know, the next morning, you know, they're in Akron, 2 hours away from Columbus, 5.5 hours away from Indianapolis, and my whole family has to drive there. You know, I wake up and I'm surrounded. Even my sister and my nieces and stuff are there from North Carolina. It's just like, and you just wake up. It's just like, this actually happened last night. Like, you know, and it's just like, it probably seemed
like a dream, like a nightmare. You know what I mean? Like, I was going to say it probably seemed like a dream, but more, you know.
Yeah. And I don't, for some reason, I was scared, but at the same time, I wasn't that scared. So I don't know. It was, my dad was paralyzed, and he got everything back in he got everything back in a year. So it's like, I thought I was going to be the same way, 0.9%. But the manic episode continued. This was January. I thought it was Jesus up till Easter. You know, Jesus is going to walk in a day. It's just like, you know, that's when I thought I was going to walk in. That's when reality hit me, so.
Well, you know what I wanted to ask you, man? Because, like, I broke up my talk into, like, three sections, you know. So that's, like, a good background of, like, the story. And I'm hoping that people who are listening will go to Adam's website, adamheldling.com, and it'll fill you in on every detail of Adam's past and, you know, what he had to endure. You know, Adam has a book. It's called Well, I Guess I'm Not Jesus. I believe it's you're definitely going to want to read that book. But what I want to ask you is, in your acceptance, how long after your diagnosis of bipolar disorder and your spinal cord injury did it take you to come to an acceptance that, you know, this was going to be your life? Like, you know, how?
Yeah, well, it was, you know, that first year, I mean, it's, I started writing. I got my right hand back, one on my left. So my left hand's paralyzed, and I got dragging so I could talk to my computer inside for me. I started writing about 10 months after my accident, so like the fall. And
right,
just starting,
that's the software.
Okay. Yep. So I started writing and just started putting everything out there, and all these people responding and just telling me I'm, you know, completely changing their perspective on life, and they're not taking the little things in life for granted. I'm talking about my emotions, the things I go through on a daily basis, my story, and it's just like, you know, I realized I had a purpose, and it's just like maybe I could help people by sharing my story in a positive, and, you know, help them in a positive way. So that's when I started to realize, you know, maybe I do have a purpose, and, you know, got over the suicidal thoughts and transitioned. But when I got back to Ohio State and did therapy towards walking and kind of realized it wasn't working and saw people that were in my same situation that were paralyzed 30 years later that were bitter and angry, that just like wanted to make you as miserable as they were. That's just like where I told myself, I'm not going to be like that. And ever since, you know, I went on, I graduated, and that's where life truly began, was when I accepted my injury. And, you know, I will never miss a day of medications. You know, I learned that lesson the hard way, but once I got my medications figured out, you know, it took a long time. I was dealing with my psychiatrist weekly and getting my medications straightened out for a year. So it took a while, you know, getting that balance. But life really started, you know, after college, and then the speaking career started, and it's sharing my story. It was just like, it just became an addiction. I used to, water skiing used to be my passion, but now it's speaking and getting up in front of people and sharing my story. But the best thing is those personal one-on-one encounters that you get where students are lined up. You could be talking to thousands of students at a time, but you'll get kids that just want to shake your hand or give you a hug. But you get those kids, they'll sit at the back of the line, and I can just tell there's something they really want to talk to you about. So they kind of stay silent for a while, and they wait for everybody to
Yeah, they probably are coming up to you because they have something they want to say to you and share. And,
Exactly. Right. So you get those students, and then I've worked with a lot of those students one-on-one, and I've gotten them to get to go to the doctors and get diagnoses and, you know, admit that, you know, realize that everything's going to be okay. They see hope. You know, I don't want the wheelchair to scare them, but at the same time, they see that, you know, even after all I've been through, I can live a productive life and be happy and you know, so I think I give them hope, but the wheelchair, I think it's, yeah. What's that?
Well, what I was going to say is, you know, like for people that don't know you, I mean, and me being able to, you know, talk to you on the phone and, you know, reading your story and looking over your blog posts and your website and things like that. I mean, some of the things that I don't think people realize is that some of your accomplishments were that you wrote a book, you know, after your accident and your diagnosis, you wrote a book. I mean, you actually drive yourself around. You have you can drive.
Transmissions just went out, but yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, but I mean, you drive yourself around. I mean, you got a college degree in engineering. You're a life coach. You go out there and you're giving presentations to kids, to anybody that can and should hear your presentation. And I kind of wanted to go into, like, you know, so that's a lot of your accomplishments that I picked up on and you'd be very proud of. And, you know, it's great to hear that even through your adversity, like you were able to, like, you know, bring yourself to a point where you can accomplish all those things. Cause that's a feat in itself. And I was looking at your website and, you know, I'm going into like a stability part now. Like, so we're basically more in the present now and then your future.
Oh yeah.
You wrote that, speaking of today, what would you say is your purpose? You know, that was in your website. So I was just curious, like, what do you think your purpose is from, you know, here on out?
Yeah, it's crazy because even, you know, this is the past, but, you know, that first year, I felt like my life was over, but even when I was in the car, when I put my hands up, I felt this force in the car, like something or someone was in my car protecting me. And I really think there was. And they call that like divine intervention. And I think, I don't want to really like to bring religion into things, but I can't think
that's
God
fine.
Is. Yeah. But yeah, God is, I think, using me for a reason, just as a tool and to spread awareness about mental illness and spread hope and talk about adversity and just show people that, you know, you can go through tough times. You know, you can see the extreme circumstances that I went through, but you've got to be able to learn from those circumstances and ultimately they're going to make you stronger and make you a better person. I think there's just so many people that worry about the past and worry about the future, but you know, I live in the present. I'm a big dreamer and stuff, but just got to take things one day at a time. And I just think just having that positive attitude and being in a wheelchair, I see a lot of people, you know, there's that stigma for people with disabilities too, that just think we're miserable and bitter and stuff, but you know, you can go on and live a fulfilling life. So I think
From talking to you, as many conversations, you are not a bitter person.
Oh, no.
And you have a lot to offer a lot of people. And being a like-minded person like yourself with, you know, your belief system, I believe that God is using you as a vessel, excuse me, and you are here to, you know, spread awareness for, you know, mental illness and physical disabilities, you know. And, you know, for me, I mean, it's like you're a shining beacon for somebody who's just not sure if they can do it. And, you know, like I wanted to ask you too, because you also wrote something on your website that said, losing both my mind and body to bipolar disorder and a spinal cord injury, you know, my story of redemption resonates strongly with all audiences. So I just wanted you to like explain, like, how do you think your story, you know, would resonate with people, and what would you want your audience to take away and learn from you? Like if they come out and see you?
Yeah, so in one way or another, you know, everybody is connected to this mental health issue or physical disability, or you know, at some point in your life, you might have some sort of handicap, or you know, you're gonna go through some sort of adversity. So, like the mind and the body thing, you know, my message I talk about in my speeches is I think the mind is much more powerful than the body. You know, I've lost both, and you know.
Yeah.
If you can't live that way without your mind, you can't live. But you know, I've got one good hand, I've got, you know, a good right arm, and I'm in a wheelchair, and with technology and all the different things, you can still live a fulfilling life. I see people that are paralyzed from the neck down that live a very fulfilling life, that are engaged, that it's just you know, so you know that I just want people to believe in themselves and realize that whatever's going through their mind, whatever, you know, physical situation they're in, you know, whether they, you know, break their leg and they don't feel like they're ever going to, you know, recover from it and be able to get back to the person they were, be the athlete they were, be, it's just like they have a devastating injury, if they have a mental illness, if they have somebody in their family with a mental illness, I just want to spread hope and just show them that everything can be worked out, and everything happens for a reason, and everything's going to be okay. And
I just got to say that, well, you're succeeding, and you know, I know just from talking to you, man, and how many people that you are reaching, and everybody tells me the same thing. Like, I'll do like presentations for NAMI and different things, but people are always saying you don't know how many people you're really reaching, and just from talking to you. On a like the basis that we were talking on the phone, you know, here and there, how many presentations you do and to kids, and I mean, you're really spreading the word and you're really opening the conversation to both, you know, for your mental health and for you know your physical disability. And yeah. You know, I just want to commend you, man, because you know, honestly, when I heard your story, you know, I did see a lot of similarities in, you know, what you were feeling in the past as far as the manic, you know, phases and stuff like that. And it's kind of like, you know, how do you not know somebody and then call them and have so many similarities and have so much to talk about? Like we did. Because what I'm trying to say is how many people can really understand, you know, through similar attributes that we have that aren't speaking up. Like, I just heard your story and I had to talk to you. So I reached out and called you. But how many people do you think that are really out there that are like, wow, this guy really changed my thinking on things and we don't hear about? You know, and I think that you're reaching a lot more people than, you know about. And the one thing that I'm impressed with, you're a life coach too. So you're taking phone calls and personal, like, one-on-one sessions and even Skype calls. So that's something that, you know, if anybody out there is listening who wants to reach out to Adam, I mean, he does do life coaching also.
Yeah, and that's something I love, and that's almost more rewarding than, I love speaking to large groups, and it's great. I mean, it's been over, like, 300 groups now so far, but it's rewarding to speak to a large group, but working with somebody one-on-one, especially somebody with mental illness. And I think, you know, making yourself vulnerable and putting your story out there and just being open about everything gets people to open up and trust you. And, you know, I try to be a trustworthy person, and, you know, I'm understanding. I've been through it all. I've made mistakes. I'm not going to judge people for what they're doing wrong, and just help them, you know, learn from their mistakes, those different things and stuff. But the interactions, the one-on-one interactions that I've had just working with students and working with people, it's just, that's been the most rewarding thing. You know, I had people that I've worked with that, you know, this one kid was really struggling, and just to see, you know, now he's one of my best friends. He'll do, you know, I'll do anything for him, but he'll do anything for me. And it's just like, just to see the transformation and watch these people grow over time, and see where they were at, and then, you know, see them, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years down the road. That is just like the most rewarding experience. It's just to see the transformation in these people, and that's, you know, money can't buy things like that.
And that's, you know, I understand. That's exactly right. Money can't buy that feeling. And, you know, if anybody out there wants to reach out to Adam, go to adamhelbling.com. You can find Adam on Facebook by his name, Adam Helbling. I'll have the links in the, you know, in the description below. But you know what, man? I just want to know, like, what are some of your future goals, like, and plans for the future? Like, do you have anything that stands out that you want to do that you, you know, I mean, amongst the other great things you're doing? I mean,
oh my God, that's the thing. It's funny. Like, actually, call bipolar like the CEO disease. I don't know if you know. I don't know. Have you heard that? I don't know.
It's because you kind of come up with
all these like crazy ideas, but people with bipolar are actually like go through with them. Like, and that's with me. Like, I come up with these off the wall ideas, but you know, I actually want to go through with them. And we're talking like, you know, my neighbor right now, he's paralyzed or like paralyzing. We have a good right hand or a bad left hand. Like, chances of that, he was in class. It's like, he was in a spinal cord injury class. And there's a lot of people with spinal cord injuries, man. And they said, like, you put a room of 10,000 people with the same injury, chances are two of them aren't going to be injured the same way. And I come rolling in an hour later and I'm just like, how's your hand? You know, how's your right hand? Or how your hand? Go, well, I got a good right hand, bad left hand. I'm like, you have your triceps? He's like, yeah, got my triceps. You're supposed to lose your triceps. I'm like, dude, we're injured exactly the same way. And it's just like, it's like we could have a reality TV show, just our lives together. He's hilarious. Like, we can do that. Like, I would, like, I've told my story so many times, and it never gets old because it's just, I don't know, you feel like you have an impact on people. And I've got that story with the, have you heard that story with the seventh grader? Did I tell you that story?
Yes, you did. Yeah.
I mean, that's what, that really keeps me going. Is that I was speaking, I used to speak up to the school up in Medina, Ohio, and in the middle school, and I speak to seventh graders, and usually I do bigger speeches, but this was somebody that I knew, so I spoke to health classes, but it was like six or seven speeches in one day, and it was almost like back to back to back. So I did three speeches back to back to back, and then at lunch, I'd been speaking so much, I was getting burned out, and I called Kate, she's my aide, the girl that takes care of me, and I just told her, like, I don't know how much more this I could do, I'm getting burned out, like, I don't know if I want to keep doing this. And then what's in the next class, there must have been a kid in that class, because at the end of the school day, the principal, assistant principal came in and pulled the teacher out of class while I was speaking. I was wondering what was going on. And the teacher told me that that kid, I guess, told his next teacher that he had been thinking about suicide. So he went to his counselor. And I guess he had been thinking about suicide for over a year. And I talked about, you know, it's not normal that way to think, you know, in the sixth grade, you know, how I was depressed, how it's not normal. And this kid, I was supposed to come on a Tuesday, but there was a snow day. So I came on a Wednesday. And I guess Tuesday night, the night before I came, he had this whole plan to go through with his suicide. And he stayed up all night, like, trying to decide whether or not to go through with it. And the next morning he came to school. So I just come to school and I spoke and he opened up about it. And that moment, it was just like, wow, just like, and that's the thing. You speak, it's just like, you can just help just like one person when you speak, that's all that matters. But that point, it's just like, you know, maybe I see, you never know, like, what would have happened to that kid. And just the relief that he had, you know, all finally opening up and realizing it, like, that it was okay to ask for help and, you know, reaching out to his parents, reaching out to counselors and, you know, finally not keeping those thoughts to himself. That right there, that has kept me going. And you know, so, you know, I want to keep speaking, I want to keep doing life coaching, but at the same time, you know, I've got plans. I live at a one-of-a-kind facility in the country for people with disabilities, and got a resident assistant that's here 24/7. You press a button, they'll help you out with little things here and there.
That's
great. You know, I'm really independent, but you know, it's nice to have that peace of mind. And
when you need a helping hand, they're there for you.
Exactly. And but I want to build more places like that for people with disabilities, because they need it. And, you know, people, there's 19-year-olds that are ending up in nursing homes, and because your home has to be completely accessible for you to be able to be allowed to move back in your home out of a hospital. So they only have, you know, there's two locations down here at Ohio State's camp, and I just happened to be lucky. It's, you know, I was able to go back to school and finish up because this place was available. So, you know, with my civil engineering degree and my friends and all these people, we've got this idea, and down the road we want to do that. And I don't know what the story, I don't know if it's, you know, a movie, you know, that'd be great or whatever, but, you know, keep and get bigger into the mental health scene. I've been working a lot with people with developmental disabilities, but I want to transition more into the mental health scene because, you know, I haven't even broke into that. You know, it's been over 300 presentations and I haven't spoke specifically to that audience. So that's the next chapter is breaking into mental health and specifically speaking to those people and working with those people. And then I want to be a life coach. And as a life coach, I'm not going to tell you what to do and I'm not going to diagnose you and I'm not going to label you. You know, I'm going to treat you as a person and you're going to be, you are the expert on your life. But, you know, I'm going to listen and I'm going to understand and, you know, I'll let you open up and I'll let you talk. But I think people just need somebody to listen and somebody to be there for them. And I want to be that person.
Well, and, you know something, man, you're going to be bigger success than you are now, because I'm going to tell you something, you're changing people's lives. That goes with that seventh grader just alone. But you're going to open this conversation with mental health because when it's time for you to open it up and people are going to come in, you're going to, you know, have more people in your life coaching. And I think as when you put your full attention to something and anything, I think just by knowing you from our conversations that you're going to make it happen, you know. And I just want to thank you, man, for, you know, taking your time out to being on Stability and Recovery. I hope to have you on soon, you know, maybe, you know, sooner than later.
That'd be great. I mean,
yeah. So for anybody out there, again, you know, you want to talk to Adam, you can reach him on his website, adamhelbling.com. You can reach him on Facebook if you want to look at some of his stories and blog posts. It's all on his website. Everything's connected. And again, Adam, man, I just want to thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and everybody out there, reach out to me. I'll respond. You know, I love talking to people and meeting new people and helping people. I think that's the key to happiness. That's, you know, at least for me, I think the best way to help yourself is to help others.
I want to thank Adam for being on Stability and Recovery. To get in touch with Adam, you can reach him on his website, which is adamhelbling.com, or you can reach out to him on Facebook. Thank you for listening, and tune in next time to Stability and Recovery.